Our next case is 9-1292, State of Ohio, ex rel. Wayne T. Doner et al. Versus Sean D. Logan, respondent. And for the relators, we have Mr. Ingram. We also have seated in the place of Justice Cupp, Judge Eve Belfance from the 9th District Court of Appeals. Thank you very much, Judge Belfance.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Bruce L. Ingram, Joseph R. Miller, and Thomas Fusoni appearing on behalf of the relators in this case. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. This court has a history of protecting Ohioans' property rights. There are 85 Ohioans before this court today asking it and respectfully requesting that it continue that long-standing precedent. For 6 of the past 9 years, relators' homes have been flooded, their farm fields inundated, their land eroded, and their crops destroyed by periodic intermittent flooding. Most recently, in 2011, barely 6 months ago, there was the most devastating and widespread flood in this area, all caused by the spillway on Grand Lake St. Mary's and the refusal of the Department of Natural Resources to engage in lake management practices, which it had previously engaged in to mitigate flooding downstream before the spillway was replaced in 1997 by a much larger spillway. The record contains over 100 affidavits, thousands of photographs, video evidence of the flooding that has occurred over the past six of the past 9 years, all caused by the enlargement of the spillway.
Counsel, we have to, since it's an original action, we have to make, we set more or less as a trial court, we have to make evidentiary determinations as well as legal determinations. You've provided us with a lot of photographs of the most recent flood. In the nomenclature of these folks that look at it, was that a 5-year flood, a 2-year flood? It was, 3 inches of rain, right?
Yeah, it wasn't a substantial amount of rain, and the reason that that caused such devastating flooding is that as the expert that was retained by the relators testified and submitted his affidavit indicated, because ODNR, since the spillway was revised in 1997, has allowed the spillway, the pool level of the lake to reach the very level of the spillway, it takes very little rain in order to create devastating flood conditions, and that really was what happened in 2011. It's not like there has to be a cataclysmic
rain. So that was not a 15-year flood or even a 5-year flood?
No, I do not believe so.
In terms of the rainfall?
I do not believe so, no.
Okay. And in the briefs and in the evidence, it's referred to that ODNR decided to change out the spillway from a 39-foot one to a 500-foot one because the Corps of Engineers and others had determined that the more than mile-long dam that created the lake in, 165 years ago, would be breached for more than 48 hours by a maximum flood. What's regarded as a maximum flood? Because I see that the dam is actually 6.5 feet higher than the spillway.
I don't know what the maximum flood
is. What do they mean
is
by that? Do you know?
Your Honor, I couldn't answer that at the present time, but the spillway was indeed revised and lengthened substantially because the dam itself, soil dam could not withstand that maximum design flood. And I'm not sure whether it was a 100-year flood or a 150-year flood. I can't answer that on the basis of the record today. In addition to the affidavits, video, and as well the expert testimony and report of Dr. Presley Campbell, the fact is that both the Sixth District Court of Appeals and the Court of Claims have found that the flooding on from Grand Lake has caused the damage to the downstream landowners. So the court is not retreading or treading on new ground here. There have been two courts in Ohio that have held that the flooding is in fact caused by the modifications to the spillway and the lake management practices.
To get to any of these facts that you're talking about now, we really need first to resolve a legal issue of whether this is in fact maintenance legally or upgrade of a system or change of a system that's already been designed and in place. What's your best argument for why these facts or this scenario paints this as a maintenance issue? Because you even in the briefs use upgrade, change, you use a lot of phrases that we generally think of as discretion, you know, it's up to them to design this process. So you're saying this is an unusual situation and maybe it requires different law, or will a regular definition of maintenance fit? Because that's not what language you often use in your brief.
Well, what we have here are two distinct things. One is changing the length of the spillway itself. The second thing that we have
is maintenance?
No, it's not maintenance. They changed the design of the spillway. They could have chosen not to change the design of the spillway and could have taken other actions indeed in order to lessen the flooding downstream by opening up the eastern end of Grand Lake St. Mary's to allow the water to flow either into Coldwater Creek or into the canal at the eastern end of the spillway. So they did not have to create a new spillway of this dimension. Had they chosen to use other methods of reducing the pool level of the lake in order to not only save the dam itself, but also to reduce downstream
flooding. You concede that that's a design issue generally entitled to immunity, correct? That's a choice on how to design this process, design the system.
Well, Your Honor, we're not talking about a tort here. We're talking about a taking. If the state of Ohio determines, for whatever reason, to design something that casts flood water from its own property onto a neighboring property owner, whether you want to call that a design issue or whatever, that is still a taking of property from the downstream landowner. And in addition to that, what we have here is the refusal to continue its maintenance, its lake level maintenance program again, which would have reduced not only any potential pressure on this dam in the event of a catastrophic rainfall, but also would have reduced or mitigated certainly downstream landowners' flooding. Indeed, ODNR admits on this record that 79 of the landowners' properties are subject to increased flooding caused by the spillway.
Mr. Ingram, could you take us back to law school and refresh us just for a minute on the black letter law on drainage, the lower riparian owners' obligations and the upper riparian owners in a sentence or two?
Well, the upper riparian landowner cannot cast water onto the lower riparian landowner that causes increased flooding or other damage relating to that unnatural casting of water from one landowner onto the other. And specifically when it relates to flooding, when it relates to flooding and the state creates an instrumentality that causes flooding or substantially increases that flooding, then black letter law, Ohio law, as well as the law, as far as I can tell, in every other state, can require that compensation be paid for that if that flooding is frequent and inevitably reoccurring. And I think if there's one thing that the parties have agreed on, and it may only be one thing in this case, and that is the test here for a taking is whether this flooding from the Grand Lake St. Mary's has been frequent and inevitably reoccurring.
And that's where this case arises. If but for the action of the state, if nothing had been disturbed out there, say the Grand Lake wasn't there, the lower riparian owners got to take the water that comes at it from rainfall. In other words, if the upper owner doesn't do anything, just lets the rain fall and it goes downhill, there's no right of the lower riparian owner to complain if that happens.
That's correct. And I'll point out in the Sexton case, it was recently decided by this court, that was a case in which there was the upper riparian landowner redeveloped the land and redeveloped it in such a way that there was excess water that should have been retained on that upper riparian land.
We remember that case. Okay. I don't want to take you off your game here. I just want to establish the folks, your clients downstream, have no right to complain if the folks above them don't do anything to disturb what would naturally happen when it rains.
Correct. And the events that led to this increased flooding, of course, was a deliberate decision by the Ohio Department of Natural Resources to increase the size of the spillway and concomitantly to refuse to continue its lake drawdown policy.
And you're maintaining that the continuing maintenance of that spillway is the continuing action that gets past the statute of limitations. That's your argument, or tolls the statute of limitations?
Yeah, it tolls the statute of limitations. I think consistent with the Dickinson case, which this court referred to with approval in the Nicolai case, another takings case, Dickinson recognized, and that's the United States Supreme Court, recognized that in cases where there is recurrent flooding that will inevitably reoccur, a landowner in those instances, having been forced by the state to bring an action to seek compensation in a circumstance in which the state should have sued itself and granted compensation to the landowner is now forced to defend himself and file a case in court to establish the taking. And as a result of that, the United States Supreme Court said that procedural niceties, and this is in the context of a statute of limitations case involving the 6-year statute of limitations under the Tucker Act, under federal law, the United States Supreme Court said that procedural niceties should not stand in the way of permitting a landowner sufficient passage of time within which to determine and sue on the basis that this flooding has reached the level of being inevitably reoccurring.
Mr. Ingram, on the issue that's disputed between you on the standard of proof with regard to the expert testimony, and as you know, we have a lot of expert testimony to wade through here, for establishing the taking, your position is that you have the burden by a preponderance of the evidence. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
However, if we're talking about a taking, as you pointed out, not a tort. So we're talking also about substantial frequency as well as severity, are we not?
Correct.
Okay, thank
Correct.
You.
Correct.
And is it your position that the 15-year interval is sufficient frequency, or is there, in your opinion, enough evidence in the record to demonstrate there's less than a 15-year frequency?
Well, Your Honor, we don't believe the court is called upon to decide whether 15 years is sufficient or enough. We believe on the facts of this case, given that in 6 of the 9 years just preceding my appearance here in court today, that is certainly a sufficient time within which to determine whether the flooding is in fact inevitably reoccurring. And I'd like to point out that ODNR's own expert in a report dated March 1, 2010 stated, and I'm quoting, standard engineering practice calls for at least 10 and preferably 15 years or more of record in order to produce meaningful hydrological statistics. So ODNR's own expert has admitted that there should be at least 10, if not 15 or more years of hydrological data in order to draw conclusions about whether a particular event or a particular structure has caused flooding sufficiently frequent to inevitably reoccur. And we believe, as the United States Supreme Court said in Dickinson, the landowner should not be caught betwixt and between. In this case, ODNR says, well, they should have filed after 2003 because that was the most severe flood. But then on the other hand, they say, oh, well, that wasn't really a taking. So the landowner, because he's forced to take the state to court, where the state should have been reversed, the state should have taken him to court to compensate him. Now the landowner is required to guess. Is 2 years enough? Is 3 years enough? Is 5 years enough? Is 8 years enough? And it's always going to be met by the state saying, oh, if you file too early, it's premature. One flood isn't enough. If you file too late, then the statute of limitations.
Counsel, so that we don't have to, if we decide in your favor, be mopping up loose ends that we didn't anticipate, if we decide in favor of your clients and all of them, what happens next? Are there eminent domain proceedings in the Mercer County Common Pleas Court? Is it in the Court of Claims? I assume the landowners, one at a time, have to establish their specific damage through testimony, which would be challenged by ODNR's experts, the landowner's experts versus ODNR, and if you prevailed here.
Yeah. If
so,
what
would happen next?
If the relators prevail in this case, then the mandamus order that will issue to ODNR will require it to file eminent domain actions in the Court of Common Pleas of Mercer County.
Under Chapter 163.
And, yes. And then at that point, the trial court will take over to handle ancillary issues that may arise, including but not limited to what is the date of take in this case and the extent of the take. That will all be determined
in the
trial court.
Management issues would be handled by the trial judge.
Yes, and in fact, I know personally that the trial judge in Mercer County has handled 5 cases that were previously decided by the 6th District Court of Appeals and made those decisions, such as the date of take and the other ancillary issues, and handled those to conclusion.
Counsel, the ODNR says even in spite of whether you've got flooding and whether you've got frequency of flooding and severity, et cetera, you missed the statute of limitations here. And that seems to be, at least in my reading, what they're primarily hanging their hat on, wading through the experts' reports, et cetera. You know, the bottom line is if the door is shut on your activity or your action and your filing, it doesn't matter. What's your best argument for your position, which I believe is that 21 years hasn't passed? And is that?
Well, again, I'm not, we're not seeking this court to establish some bright line rule that you have to wait 21 years in order for there to be, for the statute of limitations to run on an intermittent flooding case. But what we are contending in this case is that because the test requires the landowner to prove frequent and inevitably recurring flooding, the claim cannot accrue, and certainly the statute can't run before there has been sufficient time to pass to determine, is it inevitably recurring?
So it's a ripeness issue. You have to wait for the circumstances, the damage, the whatever is happening to this land, and prematureness would get it tossed out.
Get it tossed out, and of course, then you wait too long, and you're faced with the very argument we have here, the statute of limitations. But
when did the statute begin to run, in your view?
Well, it ran as of the day, it began to run as of the day we filed this case. As of the day we filed this case in 2009, the statute had begun to accrue as of that date. Because as of that date, I believe it was 4 of the previous 6 years had resulted in flooding.
Could there be continual takings and have that statute commence at continuing periods over
Correct.
A period of time, Mr.
Correct.
Ingram?
We believe that the statute had accrued when we filed, because frankly, otherwise, this case would probably be premature. So it had accrued by the time we filed in 2009. However, since 2009, there have been 2 years of very severe flooding, 2010 and 2011,
are those causes of action that are part of this case, or are those causes of action for a subsequent case?
They're part of this case, because
they
other...
They didn't occur at the time of the filing. How do they get into this case?
Well, they get into this case because the evidence has been submitted to this court, and the court accepted the evidence for 2010 and 2011. So as of today, that evidence is before this court.
And when we get to next spring, if this isn't resolved by then, and there's an additional... flooding situation, where would that situation
be
from the statute, from the standpoint of the statute of limitations?
Well, that would not be part of this record.
Right.
So we could not recover for any additional flooding that might cause additional damage, say, in 2012. That's
you
not
be permitted to file a new cause of action for those damages?
Speaking hypothetically, if there was a sufficiently more severe flood that caused significant additional damage, then I suppose, technically speaking, one could come back to court and seek additional damages, or at least file an action such as this one to seek
counsel
and damage.
I'm presuming that the area that's flooded, the properties that are flooded, your clients that are all contained in this action, you know, they continuously are flooded. Their land over and over, you know, 4 out of 6 years, 6 out of 9 years, whatever. Is there the potential for additional landowners' land to be affected, or is all the land that is affected by the creation of the spill and the activity of ODNR with regards to this lake, are they all included in your action?
Well, I don't believe I could state on the basis of the record an answer to your question. I can only tell you on the basis of what I know, having represented these 95 realtors, and these are the vast, vast majority of persons who might potentially be affected by this flooding. So if the court is concerned about, is this opening a floodgate?
By the frequency and inevitably recurring flooding, obviously, if there's some, you know, out of the ordinary act of nature, there could be other floods, but not within the context of this action.
I believe that to be correct. I don't think the floodgates, if, so to speak, are going to be open to another 95
people out there. You don't think we should be
concerned
about opening the floodgates?
Exactly.
No pun.
Right. Correct.
Thank you.
My time, I believe, has expired.
Well,
is well over, and if I've saved 3 minutes for rebuttal, then I'd respectfully ask the court to grant me that opportunity. Thank you.
Mr. Ingram? Excuse me, Mr. Cole.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, the relators are not entitled to a writ of mandamus because they did not sue the state within the statute of limitations. But even if this court finds that they did, they are still not entitled to the writ because they have not proven their case by clear and convincing evidence. The relators have no credible evidence that the modified spillway caused the recurring flooding on their properties. The only such evidence on causation comes from the respondent's expert, whose report shows that for a 15-year recurrence interval, which is the test used by the Court of Federal Claims, 68 acres, of which 16 relators have an interest, is subject to recurring flooding caused by the new, by the modified spillway.
Counsel,
Mr. Cole,
go ahead.
Mr. Cole, two things. If we were to find against you on the statute of limitations, we would then be talking about the standard that applies to this case. If we were, in fact, to find that this is a preponderance of evidence that the relators must meet to obtain their mandamus and to get to the takings question, is there enough evidence based on a preponderance of evidence?
Okay, so if they are timely and we go, you establish that it's a preponderance standard? No, and because they have no credible expert evidence on a causation, which is necessary. No question they have submitted substantial evidence on the existence of flooding. We aren't challenging that. But it
Yes. Why was the spillway built?
When was the
why?
Why?
I want your take on that.
The department was required by federal law to comply with federal dam safety regulations. There's been a history
so
of flooding.
Corps of Engineers was behind this in the first place then?
Well, they did a study in 1981, which is part of our evidence, which is not disputed, that the Beaver Creek, the Grand Lake area has had a history of flooding.
I understand that.
Yes.
And the county engineer undertook stream maintenance to improve the Beaver Creek, and that's under maintenance now, all the way to the Wabash, is it not?
I believe so.
Okay, so
but the
county did what they could do to solve that problem.
Perhaps, yes.
Well, but the yes but or no, they either did or
the,
didn't.
The county did what it did. I mean, there's problems in the area, and the natural resources.
Oh, do you know what the county did? Is the Beaver Creek under maintenance or not?
The Beaver Creek, as far as its control, I mean, as far as how it's right.
The county engineer hired somebody to go out there and scoop it out, clean out the trees, and to make it improve its capacity for flow when there's a lot of rain.
I believe they've taken those measures, yes.
And the spillway, according to what I've understood from the evidence, it was changed because somebody said a maximum flood would have water running over this mile-long levee or dam that was built when the canal lake was constructed.
I think that was
for 48 hours, 2 days.
I think that was part of the reason.
What amount of rain would take to do that?
I don't to cause a probable maximum flood.
Yeah, what's a maximum flood?
Yeah, I know. I would think it is not so much on the recurrence level as it would be the impact, the overtop.
How much water? How many inches of rain?
I don't know. I don't know what, you know, if there's a precise definition on that. The maximum flood,
well,
I think, is the impact
the
of the overflow.
Is 6.5 feet above the spillway.
The spillway is below the dam level,
yes,
right?
By 6.5 feet.
That's correct.
Take an incredible amount of rain to reach that.
Justice Pfeiffer, there not only has been historical rain problems in the area, The evidence has shown by our expert has showed that rainfall has increased in the area since the spillway has been built. That's Mother Nature. I mean, that's just the way it's been. And it is their burden to show that the increased flooding by recurrence interval, not velocity, not how long the water stays on the land, not the depth. Those all go to the issues of damages. That's part two.
Let me ask you this. Do you disagree with Ingram's description of the black letter law of the obligations of the upper riparian owner with respect to the lower riparian owner?
If you mean in the context, if they did nothing, there would be no obligation on the state. Yes, I would agree with that.
And
I would also agree with Justice Stratton that it was a maintenance issue. It was a discretionary.
What can't they do? That's okay. What can they not do?
Well,
the upper riparian owner.
In a takings case, yeah, negligence case, it's a different, like case leasing. That's why that case is distinguishable. If the state causes substantial and unreasonable interference with the property rights of a private landowner, then they are entitled to just compensation under the federal and Ohio constitutions. Our expert shows that if their claims are timely, for 68 acres, of which 16 relators have an interest, that is attributable by the modeling, by the study,
and your expert,
to the new spillway, to the modified spillway.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your answer there.
If I may, Justice Stratton, if they went on statute of limitations, our expert has shown that for a 15, if 15 years is the standard, that's the Court of Federal Claims. Two Ohio Courts of Appeal say it's 10 years. But if 15 years is the standard, our evidence, there is clear and convincing evidence from Stantec, our expert, to show that the impact caused by the new spillway is 68 acres, of which 16 relators would have an interest and would, if they meet the statute of limitations, would be entitled to the writ.
Okay. Now, counsel, that was based on modeling?
That's correct.
Okay. And modeling's one thing, and I'm presuming that's how the spillway, the reason it was created also in the beginning, was there was some federal, maybe Army Corps of Engineers modeling, and they said this earthen dam that's here now is not going to sustain, and then they put in their variables in the model, and then they said, okay, so now we need to create this spillway. So then they use another model to determine whether it's the land for all of the relators here or whether it's just a smaller portion of land, and they're saying based on these numbers that we plug in here. But the reality of the situation is that you have actual evidence that's brought forth that says that your modeling may say one thing, but here's what's been happening in the last 6 years out of 9, 4 years out of 6. Here's what really happened, not a model. Here's what really happened to this land.
Correct. And the question becomes, what of that flooding, which we don't dispute, how much is attributable? How much is caused by the modified spillway, which is their burden to show by clear and convincing evidence?
Is there an alternative? I mean, did your expert come up with another reason why more than 16 acres were flooded?
Well, it was 68.
68 acres and 16 homeowners. Is that
what the area, again, the area, even with the modification, the addition of the flashboards, the notch, all these flood control measures, I mean, the whole area is in a floodplain. It's got flooding problems. Flooding problems existed long before the spillway was built. In 1988, when they added the flashboards, it alleviated it some, but there were still flooding problems. The state, they didn't sue the state in mandamus before 97. They said, when you modified the spillway, that's caused the taking. By the expert modeling shown by Stantec, they've shown, okay, just based on the modeling, based on causation, the modified spillway has only flooded these areas now, these new areas, because at this stage, we're really only concerned with a recurrence interval, not how bad it is. That's in the, if you rule against us and there's an issue of damages and compensation. So yes, our expert has admitted, if it's a 15-year interval, 68 acres are attributable to the modified spillway.
What happens if it's a 10-year interval?
If it's 10 years, then it is 22 acres, of which 13 relators have an interest, and that's in Appendix A to our exhibit. The 15-year is Tab A, Exhibit B, on page 14 of the Stantec report.
So what did they get in March, the 3-inch rain that happened up there? What's
this March? Well,
yeah,
we wanted to respond. We weren't permitted, and it was a heavy rain. I mean,
no, but categorize it. I mean, just it was a.
I didn't measure
rain.
It. I mean, it was. I don't remember the. There, it was.
What would a 3-inch rain be? Would that be a 2-year, a 5-year, or every year? What is a 15-year?
I think for that area, a 3-inch rain isn't all that uncommon. I mean, it's got a history of heavy rainfall. The other thing is, in March, there was snow on the ground. I mean, that was a contributing factor as well.
And that's part of the rub. They
right.
say you folks went from 39 feet spillway to 500. That's 12 and a half times the release area as was there previously. Or if you want to just count the notch,
well,
it's a 25%.
The flashboards, yes.
Okay, now, but they say in addition to that, until you built this, every year you took it down a foot in the winter to accommodate frozen ground, snow melt, and the spring rains. And the lake would, 120 or 112 square miles drains into the lake.
I think it's 113.
So that would accommodate those early rains without causing flooding, and you stop doing that. So instead of having a bathtub that's down 12 inches, you've got a full bathtub when the rains hit. And that's part of their claim, is you've done two things. You built the spillway, and you also changed the management. You put in these two 60-inch, what do you call those things, the release valves, and you won't use that to lower the lake in advance of a known, forecast that trouble's coming.
Well, there are, first of all,
they've wrapped that all together, haven't they, in their complaint?
The relators make much issue of whether ODNR did the right thing. I mean, again, I think the test here is whether it's caused substantial and reasonable
sure.
interference. There were reasons. I mean, there were safety issues why they don't draw down the lakes. If you have a dry spring, the rocks are going to show. The Grand Lake's only 6 feet deep. If you bring it down, you don't want boaters, you don't want people using the lake crashing into shoals or rocks and things like that. You've got water quality issues. You've got impacts on wildlife. I mean, it wasn't
that's
a totally arbitrary decision.
That's understood, and that's a choice the state makes. And their argument is, if you make that choice, we're going to accommodate the boaters who ding their props on those stumps that have been there for 165 years, and they're there. Apparently, they never go away. Then if you're going to do that, and you do it to our detriment, then you owe us money. That's what the case is.
And our expert shows, if the claim is timely, that 68 acres only is caused by the new spillway. That is the only clear and convincing expert evidence of causation here.
So if we decide the statute of limitations issue against you, do we have to decide if it's the 68 acres or if it's another 120 acres or if it's all 95, or does that really go back to the trial court? And then each individual landowner has to prove, using that same battle of experts, whether that, in fact, affected their property, and the judge decides the evidence on each individual piece of property. Because it sounds like you're requiring, if we decide the statute of limitations against us, there are individual pieces of property with conflicting expert testimony that may go to damages, or the judge may say, there's no damages because your proof didn't show that it covered it. So is that an issue that goes all back to the trial court for all 95, and 13 may prove it and the rest may not, or do we have to parcel out and only send back the ones that we find at this level are proven?
To answer your question, I do disagree with Mr. Ingram. If you do find against the statute of limitations and find that there has been a taking, I believe this court must determine the extent, at least the amount of acreage. At the appropriation level, the trial court's jurisdiction is limited to compensation, so the factors that go into the award of damages. So I believe this court, in its order has to determine what, not just parcels, but what portions of parcels. And that's why we, although it's 68 acres, some are obviously impacted more. A number of them, it's a tenth of an acre, a very minimal impact. And this court, since the Common Pleas Court, if you award a writ of mandamus at all, this court has to make that determination. The Common Pleas Court, does determine date of take. Council, that's a valuation issue.
I want to bring you back to the management issues for a moment, forgetting about the rainfall, which is the bigger factor in this case, but management issues as well. As I read the record, 41% of the adjoining land that drains into the lake would naturally go into St. Mary's and up to Lake Erie. And 59% of the surface area that feeds into the lake would have naturally drained into the lake, or would have naturally drained into this creek and then into the Wabash going west. And so part of their complaint is that you had the ability, and if you were doing these changes, to put floodgates or these big tile, like you have there, the 60 inchers, at the east end to take some of it into the St. Mary's River and send it where it would have naturally gone but for the construction of the lake. So that's part of their complaint as well.
And if it was a negligence cause of action, I think that might be relevant, but it really isn't relevant here.
And finally, who is basically responsible for the management of drainage in Mercer County? Is it the county engineer?
Drainage just throughout the county, or?
Yes, solving drainage disputes, drainage management, all of those things. Isn't it the county engineer?
I would think so.
And the soil and water conservation folks?
A number of entities might have an interest in that.
And soil and water conservation, is that part of natural resources or not?
Is it affiliated
with the Department of Natural Resources?
Yes, it is. Yes.
It is. And they recommended that so one of their agencies recommended they shouldn't do it this way, as well as the county engineer. Am I correct about the record?
I believe that's correct. Again, since it's not a negligence cause of action, I don't think that has any relevance. I think it's what they've been able to prove by clear and convincing evidence since they sought the remedy of mandamus.
And that's what I wanted to ask Mr. Cole, because the standard of proof is important for us to also articulate. Are you saying clear and convincing evidence because this is a mandamus action or because it's a takings question?
It's because it's a mandamus action. The appellate courts have all held when the relief sought is mandamus, that's an extraordinary remedy, and thus it's clear and convincing. I will say, if the relators wanted a preponderance standard, they did have the ability to sue the state in the court of claims. That would have been, similarly, like we have Tucker Act suits against the federal government, that would have been a direct suit, that would have been a preponderance standard. The court of claims does have jurisdiction over takings cases, but since they went with mandamus, it's clear and convincing, and that burden does not shift to the state.
And your cases are listed in your brief on that particular
point.
That
is correct, and they have cited no mandamus case that doesn't use the clear and convincing standard.
Thank you.
Any chance to get a few words on statute of limitations?
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Your Honors, the plain language of Section 2305.09E and the Nicolai decision make it very clear that it's a four-year statute of limitations for eminent domain cases. Dickinson.
Well, doesn't the Sexton case make it clear that it isn't?
Sorry?
Doesn't the Sexton case make it clear that it isn't a four-year, that this is a continuing?
I think Nicolai made it clear that it is. And I understand you dissented in Nicolai, but the court held that claims sounding in eminent domain are governed by 2305.09E. I think the critical question, though, is when does that claim accrue? Now, they cite Dickinson, but Dickinson has been limited and eroded by subsequent Supreme Court decisions. That's noted in the Mildenberger case, which we have cited as additional authority. It was a 2001 decision by the Court of Federal Claims. Dickinson now has basically been limited to its own facts. And in Dickinson, you had multiple stages, government action in multiple stages. Here, it was a one-time event. The state did one thing. It modified the spillway in 1997. Once the permanent nature of the taking is apparent, the statute of limitations starts, even if damages are not fully complete or calculable. That's the law. That is Dickinson as modified by the Dow and the Kabua cases, as set forth in Mildenberger, which again we filed as additional authority. Dickinson is distinguishable because here, again, there was not a continuing process of governmental events. There is no, and further, there is no continuous taking because the idea of drawing down would be a remedial measure, which this court, relying on some Sixth Circuit precedent, Ohio Midland, said you can't indefinitely toll the statute of limitations unless you mitigate or undo the taking. That's Nicolai. Otherwise, you would effectively have no statute of limitations.
Well, counsel, what about the argument that's been put forth that it's a ripeness issue, and this case was not that you needed a certain amount of time to pass and a certain occurrences to happen in order to establish frequency and inevitability of its recurrence? And if you say that this started in 1997 when the modification took place and it's a four-year statute of limitations on that, what would the state's response have been in 2001 when this case was filed?
Well, if the statute of limitations, if you follow the Harris v. Liston, which is the triggering act, if that's the statute of limitations, then it would be untimely if they didn't sue within 4 years. But even if you don't go with that, you have most of the relators in this case, through their affidavits or through their deposition testimony, saying, we knew there were problems, we knew about the Post case, so we knew this was going to cause flooding. All of them, by 2003, if not before, testified that, at least for statute of limitations purposes, this flooding hit everywhere. I mean, according to them.
It hit everywhere in 2003.
In 2003. So.
But the triggering event is 2007.
And that's too late. They did not sue until 2009.
What happens if they didn't get flooded until 2003?
Well, I'm sorry?
What happens if the flooding didn't occur until 2003?
Then if you follow Dickinson as not modified, then this court could find, if there was no flooding at all from until
Mother Nature, unleashed enough water to bring to light the flaw or the
result.
The effect of this spillway.
Then, If you don't go by the triggering act, if you go by the discovery rule, or if you go by Dickinson as unmodified, then that would be the triggering event. Once, as shown in Mildenberger, once the permanent nature is shown, then that's when the
clock starts. And one flood is enough to show that?
Yeah, but there wasn't here. In this case, most of the relators were indicating there was flooding immediately when it already was increased, that they all knew about it. They all admitted that
In 2003, you're saying?
No, even before that. Most of the relators' affidavits said there was increased flooding immediately. But the worst flooding that put them all on notice certainly was 2003. No relator said, well, I didn't really get flooded. It was after that. And so regardless of what date you pick, it is no later than 2003. They sued in 2009. They're outside the statute
Council,
of limitations.
Before you sit down, you gave us this beautiful big map. It says Stantec on it. Could you explain, and this says a 15-year event, right?
There is a 15-year map, I believe, yes. Excuse me, yes.
It's in the back of your brief. That's where I found it.
Yes.
So
yeah, Appendix A.
Yeah, so is that the 15-year?
That's the 10-year. The 15-year is in our evidence at Exhibit A,
so
Tab B.
I'm asking about
A.
The one in the back of your brief.
10-year.
That's a 10-year, and so what is in blue is what? It says, it identifies that, is, are we to take it that's what a 10-year flood would look like?
Oh.
It says no change on the...
The map, let me answer it this way, Justice Pfeiffer, and I apologize. The map should corroborate what the I believe it was the April 29th update to the Stantec report, that 22 okay. acres
but
are...
What's in blue? That's what I'm asking. Is that what they're saying a 10-year flood
Besides
would look
water?
Like? It says the impacts, it says blue is no change, but I don't know what that means.
Oh, I see. Blue would be, right, there would be no change.
Yeah,
right.
But does that mean that's where the water would be in a 10-year flood?
I think that would be where it would have been under the old spillway.
Under the old spillway?
Yes. Well,
why are you giving
what me- it might be, Justice Pfeiffer, again, I
oh,
haven't
it's in your
the-
brief. What is it?
Yes. It's showing, under a 10-year recurrence interval.
Yeah.
It's showing there's no increased flooding in that area due to the modified spillway.
So does the blue represent what the where the water would be in a 10-year flood? That's what I'm asking you.
With a 10-year recurrence interval, that would be the additional flooding shown in the legend.
And the yellow is what you're saying is that's what your expert says would be caused by the...
That is correct. That's who we stand by.
And that's where the water would be in a 10-year flood.
Caused by the modification of the spillway, yes.
Have you seen those pictures that they gave us from the flood this year?
Yes, and we wanted to respond to them. Okay. We wanted to be able to analyze
Water's
them and give you...
a whole lot more than this map shows it covering.
Well, this was before that. I mean, if the court wishes, we're still more than willing
okay.
to respond with expert, which they didn't. They presented no expert evidence. They showed more flooding. Okay, what's the causation? They haven't proved it. You can't just show. They could take a million pictures of water on their lands. It doesn't prove causation. Our guy did. And we've shown that due to the new spillway, some of the acreage is impacted, but not to the extent that the relators are claiming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Ingram, you have used all of your time. You can start with a minute to sum up.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to go to the burden of proof. We believe on the basis of the evidence before this court, whether this court applies the standard of preponderance of the evidence or whether this court applies the standard of essentially beyond reasonable doubt, we have satisfied this standard. The expert's report that was submitted by ODNR in this case is fatally flawed in a number of circumstances. Number one, there are at least a dozen affidavits of landowners with photographs showing flooding on their property at various times, which ODNR's maps attached to its brief claim would never have flooded as a result of the spillway. So we have eyewitness affidavits and photographs showing flooding where ODNR's expert says there shouldn't be any flooding as a result of the new spillway. And why is that?
I understand Mr. Cole's argument. He's not disputing flooding. His position is you haven't developed evidence to show that the cause of the flooding is directly connected to the increase in the spillway. And he claims that he has an expert who has done that, but you don't have any causation evidence. Did you want to respond to that position?
Yes,
please?
Yes, I will. The causation evidence is a combination of both the affidavits and photographs showing that after 1997, and particularly within the last 6 of 9 years, flooding has been substantially increased both in duration and depth, as well as frequency.
And we get that from photographs?
photographs and statements of landowners who have been on this land for up to 50 to 75 years, saying, we know what the conditions were before 1997, we know what the conditions are after 1997, and we attest under oath that there is substantially more flooding, more duration, more depth, more damage caused after the spillway was modified. And I'd like
and
to point-
And that's with no other variables that had occurred post 97.
Correct, there were no other variables.
Right, let
and
me,
they
let
haven't
me,
pointed to any.
All right, counsel, let me ask about a question, an answer that was given by opposing counsel. If we find that the statute of limitations is as you say it to be, then is the question for this court to determine the acreage and the who are the relators that are entitled to then have their cases remanded to the trial court for evaluation?
In the first instance, this court must decide whether the relators are entitled to the mandamus requiring ODNR to file eminent domain actions. The court is not required to go and into the record and determine how many acres of land has been flooded as per each relator. The Sixth District Court of Appeals, when it decided the Post case in 2006, simply ruled that the relators were entitled to a mandamus and ODNR was required to file eminent domain actions. It was in the trial court that it was determined the extent of that.
Were they required by the Court of Appeals order to file eminent domain against all of the relators, or is it then up to ODNR to decide which relator they will then include in this trial court action?
It's up to this court to determine which relators, and we believe all of them are entitled to that mandamus.
How do we do that?
But it's up to this court. Because there is evidence before this court, the evidence that I've just mentioned before this court, affidavits and otherwise, that show that they have been, in fact, impacted more severely by flooding since 1997. Each one of these relators is entitled to that mandamus relief, as each of the relators was in the Sixth District Court of Appeals case. The Post case.
So you're saying that if we issue an order here, then our order has to contain language that each and every relator is entitled to be part of the action that ODNR is instructed to file with regards to eminent domain.
Correct.
Have an obligation to go through and say, well, maybe 65 of them, we believe the evidence is supportive and 25 of them are not? Is that also our obligation and duty?
Well, Your Honor, we don't believe there is evidence to that effect. But if let's suppose hypothetically there was a relator who said in his deposition, I don't have any more flooding since 1997, I don't know why I'm in this lawsuit, then obviously the court
obligation. That's an extreme example. But I'm talking about you've got an affidavit saying I've got more flooding. You've got an expert that says, yes, you may have more flooding, but it's not caused by that. Do we have to make that determination who to believe, what expert to believe, what individual to believe on each of the 95 cases? That's what I'm asking.
And my answer to that is the expert that ODNR has submitted for this court's consideration has no credibility
That's what I'm asking. We have to make that determination under what you're considering. Have to decide if we agree with you. They obviously think their expert's credible. You say it's not. Do we have to decide if they are or not? And then on each individual piece of property, are they credible or not?
If their expert is credible, then their expert is saying there's no causation here. And if their expert is credible, maybe the case is over. But the fact is, their expert ignored two salient facts. One salient fact is that he did not look at the lake level that ODNR maintains on this lake. And his flooding graphs and flooding models don't take into account.
So the answer to my question is we have to decide issues of credibility between two parties.
I think you're going to have to do that. That is the nature
of
mandamus.
That's my question. Is or isn't, but do we have to decide that?
And on the basis of the record here, and because of the deficiencies in the expert's report ignoring salient factors when he did his modeling, the experts' reports examined on their face tilt substantially in favor of the relators in this case and not ODNR.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ingram. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We will take this matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision. Thank you very much.